What's up, folks? Welcome to Nino's Corner.tv. I'm with Johnny Vedmore from newspace.com, and I got to tell you, folks, we got a hell of a show today. What is the Peter Thiel Klaus Schwab connection? I've always wanted to know this. I've heard a lot about Peter Thiel, and I've always just been confused about the guy. I know he's like the god or the creator of AI, and Trump is partnered up with him, but what's his history? Who is this dude? Like, we got to find out who this guy is, and what is the Trump connection, the Klaus Schwab connection? Are they all players in the same game? Well, Johnny's going to break it down for us today, folks. This is a very, very important podcast, and I really highly recommend checking out Johnny Vedmore, newspace.com, folks. You're going to get a lot of information there, and he does a lot of deep diving. Johnny, thank you so much for joining me, man.
Thank you for having me, man. My heart is pounding to talk about this one. I really mean it. My heart is pounding. I got a lot of emotion. This has been an emotional journey. This has been a journey to tell this story, really, has been a journey that's happened since 2020, when I was first asked by Whitney Webb of Unlimited Hangout to learn about Klaus Schwab's ancestry. And during that time, I went back in time, the head of the World Economic Forum. Nobody knew who his father was. There was rumors, there was all types of speculation. I was given 6 weeks to go and find out who he was. And I didn't only find out who he was, I discovered this amazing story about how he worked on the Nazi nuclear atomic bomb program, central to an extent.
So hold on, wait a second here. You spent 6 weeks deep diving into this?
6 weeks deep diving into the first of these articles. And this is probably the seventh or eighth extremely deep dive that happened since that first one. And that first one was important because I was able that 6 weeks really was spent looking through Swiss and German archives to understand that Klaus Schwab's father was a man called Eugen Wilhelm Schwab. And he worked for a company called Escher Weiss in Ravensburg in Germany, in a place called Schwabia. And it's on the border of Switzerland. And it was central to the Nazi atomic bomb program. Not only did the factory which Klaus Schwab's father, Eugen, managed, he was the top guy there, not only did it create bomb casings for the potential nuclear bomb for the Nazis, but it was also working on making large turbines for the heavy water programs where they'd enrich uranium, send it up to Norway, it needed enormous turbines. And then they would be able, hopefully, to make the atomic bomb. We all know there was stories where the British and other forces went in and stopped this from happening. And, you know, there was a lot of operations to stop them. But Klaus Schwab's father was central to that. And that was where it started. And then I followed Klaus Schwab's career. I watched him as he went to Harvard. I found all of the information I could. I discovered he went to Kissinger's International Seminar. I discovered that Kissinger's International Seminar was a CIA-funded leadership program that was funded by three different conduits, at least of the CIA, the Fairfield Foundation, American Friends of the Middle East, and the Asian Foundation. And this program ran from 1950 to 1967 in Harvard. Klaus Schwab attended between 65 and 67, and 67 was the same year he graduated from this Kissinger International Seminar, was the same year that it was revealed to be a CIA-funded program. It all fell apart. Kissinger went into Nixon's administration and left really the reformed, that whole leadership program reformed into something, a selection program out of something called the German Marshall Fund. But I was interested at the time, when I was looking at the people who Kissinger gave to Klaus Schwab as mentors, it was the likes of Herman Kahn, who's called the real Dr. Strangelove, the man who they say Stanley Kubrick wrote Dr. Strangelove and based him on. It was, you know, he was the guy who was behind Mutually Assured Destruction. He wrote On Thermonuclear War in 1961. 1964, Stanley Kubrick's movie come out. So there's only a few years between it. And Herman Kahn said, oh, Kubrick promised me that that wasn't about me, that it was about someone else. But the fact is, he was obviously central to it. Another person who really appears in that movie as characters is Henry Kissinger, of course, who was turning in his circle. And a guy as well is a guy called John Kenneth Galbraith, who was one of the most important statesmen in American political history, advisor to many presidents, a very left-wing type of fella. But John Kenneth Galbraith and Herman Kahn were given to Klaus Schwab, or Klaus Schwab was given to them, you could say, to go back to Europe to create the World Economic Forum. And it was originally called the European Management Symposium, set up in 1971. The first keynote speakers included Herman Kahn and John Kenneth Galbraith sitting on the stage with them. They were the mentors given to Klaus Schwab as this leadership program. And at first, the World Economic Forum looked like something that was set up to infiltrate Europe and fight against some Soviet infiltration. So there seemed to be, it was just the backwards and forwards, but there's something else in it. Because, of course, Klaus Schwab, at the same time, got phoned by a friend of his, Peter Schmidheiny. His father, Jakob Schmidheiny, had worked with Klaus Schwab's father at Escher Weiss. In actual fact, they shared the same positions, one in Switzerland and one in Ravensburg. And Peter Schmidheiny phoned him when he got back to Harvard and said, hey, Klaus, I need you at my company to help merge Sulzer AG and Escher Weiss together with Brown Bavaria and make a bigger company. And at that time, when Klaus Schwab went back into that, as he's leaving the center of nuclear theory, nuclear debate in America, he goes over and he helps the South African apartheid regime via Escher Weiss gain nuclear weapons technology that allowed them to make 7 nuclear weapons. So that's extremely important. They were an apartheid regime, extremely racist. It was all surreptitious, but he had just literally come from the center of where a lot of the ideology behind nuclear theory was happening, this Harvard central hub. But it wasn't only that. After I did that article, I went on and I followed a lot of the CIA's sort of involvement in the nuclear debate, Kissinger's next steps, some of Kissinger's best friends, how one of Kissinger's best friends was father was one of the founding fathers of Israel. I followed a lot of different routes, alleyways, but something bothered me the whole time. There was that feeling that between 1967 onwards, when Klaus Schwab is helping the South African apartheid regime gain nuclear weapons. I didn't really properly explore that. And at the same time, I was looking into Peter Thiel's ancestry because it was something that I wanted to do. And at that time, I thought, God, that they really look similar. It looks like Peter Thiel's father worked roughly in the same... No, that can't be possible, I said. This was 2021, 2020, 2021. I'm like,
Before he really entered the scene.
Yeah, the people knew. The people who knew what he was. They sensed that he was bigger than everything else. But he was just coming in. Like the information about him was just becoming more clear what he is, and that is complicated. Was becoming more clear. So I was thinking, no, there's no way that his father...
So hold on. Peter Thiel was already on your radar at that time.
Yeah. He was on... I was working with Whitney Webb as well, and we were looking at a lot of the tech pioneers. I'd already investigated a woman called Nicole Youngkin. She was in business with Jeffrey Epstein, Peter Thiel, and Ehud Barak in Carbine 9/11, which was an article I released in 2019. So Peter Thiel was definitely on my radar by then. I just couldn't believe that it would be possible. So it was only recently where I said, I'm going to go back and I'm going to have a look at some of this and I'm going to work out who Peter Thiel is. And first of all, I went back to college days, his university days, started investigating. But I'm not happy about these things unless I look at the wider picture, the bigger picture, and that often for me, I mean your family, you know, who brought you up, who you get your oomph from, your life, your life. You know, this is something people really underestimate. I see repeating, especially within high level actors, they, the establishment, the deep state, they, the proverbial they, recruit these people from families that they can trust, from
nepotism,
good people.
Nepotism.
Yeah, of course, nepotism, but mixed with, you know, in amongst those people, you can find some very clever people. Peter Thiel may be evil, but also very clever. This led me back to apartheid South Africa, where I went back, and I honestly, it's been the darkest article I've ever looked across. What I've really come across, or I think stumbled across, is both Klaus Schwab was working on the apartheid South African regime nuclear program at this time, and so was Klaus Thiel, Peter Thiel's father. Peter Thiel was actually young and living in South Africa at the time.
So hold on. Let me get this straight. So Peter Thiel's father is connected to Klaus Schwab.
In that sense, yes. Klaus Thiel and Klaus Schwab both worked.
Both have the same first name. Klaus Thiel
both
and
had
Klaus
the same,
Schwab.
Yep. The German community in South Africa at the time was really important. I think we should go through this. I'm going to share my screen with you.
Go ahead.
And you're going to get to see a sneak peek of an article that comes out in a few days.
So this is going to be on your Substack.
This is going to be on my Substack. I will put it up elsewhere, but this will be on my Substack. It already is for paid members. It has been for a month. It's coming out on the 30th properly. And this is Schwab and Thiel nuclear apartheid. This is not an, I'm not exaggerating. This is one of the most horrible articles ever. This is a story of how Peter Thiel's father and Klaus Schwab ensured that tens of thousands of black slaves and their family members were eaten to death by radiation. There is zero exaggeration there. Zero.
How many?
Tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands. No records are kept. This is going to be difficult. So in 1967, Klaus Thiel and Klaus Schwab are both in South Africa. This is of course from my second in. And they went to a place. Klaus Thiel was going to a place called Swakopmund, and Swakopmund was a complicated area that had been in German South Africa once upon a time. It was an extremely German area, and down the road there was a mine. This is an area that had genocide before. In this article, I cover how in 1904, as you see on the screen, Samuel Maherero and Captain Hendrik Witbooi led their people against German colonial rulers. They killed more than 100 German settlers in Okandia, and the retaliation by the Germans over the following 4 years was brutal. It was a genocide. It was the first genocide of that century. And the Herero and Nama people of the region were murdered. I think we know that South Africa was a very racist place.
Right,
It was very hard for people to live there. Right now
you see Trump, you know, making a big deal, bringing in these refugees from South Africa, the whites that are being killed. But it happened first to the blacks, I guess, correct?
Yes, of course. I mean, okay. There is an element of reaping what one sows, of course, within all of this. But that's really hard because it goes generation after generation after generation. This is part of what I do. I explore the generations and how they repeat. Now, it was a place called Swakopmund that was well built by the Germans. The Germans had invested a lot of money, and there was a fair few mines in the area. But it was Captain Peter Lowe who first discovered uranium in the Namib Desert. This is all in Namibia now, but that was at the time known as German Southwest South Africa. That's the complicated way it was. And a lot of the big guys were down there at this time. You know, big companies were looking at the deposits, but there was one deposit in particular. It's the biggest uranium deposit in the world. It's Reusing. It was about 50 kilometers away from the coast where Swakopmund was, and it was a very profitable mine. There was a lot of evidence as I was going through the archives of how profitable mine was and when it actually opened, because that's disputed. They say it's like was functioning from about 1974 properly, but in actual fact, it was functioning since the 50s secretly, because the nuclear weapons program of the South Africans was secret at the start. It wasn't out in the open. So they don't include all of the time before either as time where people could have died within the mines. But it was pretty important. Now, I'm going to skip some of
this. And what year was this?
This was 1967, 1968, we're going back to.
I mean, all throughout time in history, I mean, we've used, like, the Chinese that built the railroads in the southwest desert. I mean, there's graveyards here in El Paso and all through the southwestern desert of the Chinese. I mean, we've been taking advantage of the less fortunate, of the poor, for the genocide, the Spanish Inquisition. I mean, this has been happening throughout time, right? And this is just another look at another genocide, basically.
Dude, it'll keep going on. Human nature is human nature.
Take advantage of the weak. You know, this is exactly how it's been throughout history, throughout time.
So Peter Thiel had spent his early childhood in Cleveland. I'm going to give you a bit of this. But soon relocated to South Africa. The young Peter Thiel attended an elite whites-only prep school in Johannesburg, followed by a German language public school in Swakopmund itself, because his father was working in the mine. Father's working in the uranium mine, top man. Swakopmund was a different place to live for black people. The white community honored their German ethnicity. Now, this is a quote from The Guardian's Chris McGill, from an article entitled How the Roots of PayPal Mafia Extend to Apartheid South Africa. At the time, Swakopmund was notorious for its continued glorification of Nazism, including celebrating Hitler's birthday. In 1976, the New York Times reported that some people in the town continued to greet each other with a Heil Hitler and to give the Nazi salute. Van Niekerk visited Swakopmund during South African rule. I was there in the 1980s, and you could walk into a curio shop and buy mugs with Nazi swastikas on them. If you're German and you're in Swakopmund in the 70s, which is when Thiel was there, you're part of that community. And he was very much, that Peter Thiel got brought up in sort of thing. Now, this is what the uranium mine was like. A guy called Chafkin wrote about this Not in full detail. I don't think he's done it justice in anywhere near the. This is why this is so important to explain. He in Chafkin's books, he talks about the Namibian mining. He says uranium mining is by nature risky. A report published after the end of apartheid by the Namibia Support Committee, a pro-independence group, described conditions of the mines in grim terms, including an account of contract labourer on the construction project. The project Klaus's company was helping to oversee, Klaus Thiel, who said workers had not been told they were building a uranium mine and were thus unaware of the risks of radiation. The only clue had been that the white employers would hand out wages from behind glass, seemingly trying to avoid contamination themselves. The report mentioned dying like flies in 1976 while a mine was under construction. Now, you go into this and you get to read a lot about the accounts of what's going on. And there's this very interesting book in 2021 called Monstrous Ontology. I think it's very convenient we're coming up to Halloween for this. Politics, Ethics, and Materiality, where the authors, Katrina Noether and Andrea Pavoni, specifically draw an anthropological fieldwork conducted in Swakopmund, now referred to as Uranium Capital of the World, and contrasted with the works of Donna Haraway, Anna Singh, and H.P. Lovecraft. Let me read you a bit of this, because this is chilling, and this gives you a good idea. Indeed, to ingest uranium, known as internal exposure, would be to become monstrous through sickness, a process of becoming uranium, or at least the twisted byproduct of working in the industry. This was mirrored in the way that mining was sometimes described to me as a commonality across linguistics. Imina Oda Natuli Oshiwabi, Mugodi Urikutitadia Shona, Olibulu Aliaka Nzoto Nanaga in Lingua, all
Damn,
translating
that's pretty good, bro.
Thanks. All translating as the mines are eating us. Whilst these phrases also referred to economic exploitation that was often associated with the mines and are specific neither to Swakopmund nor Africa, in situ they vividly describe a particular effect of radiation on the body, the effect of being eaten alive, with the body weakened, slowly destroyed by seemingly invisible forces over a long period of time. Man, these people were normal mine workers, 3,000 at a time. Yeah, they would go home to their families, to their children, to their wives, while covered in this stuff, unaware, many of them unaware of the actual damage that it would do, that it would kill them, that it would kill their children, that it would kill their wives, that it would kill everybody they loved, and they would watch everything they loved die around them, and it would never be reported, and they would be slaves to it. Slaves to it. This is a genocide that lasted for more than 10 years. This is them, the white owners of these mines, saying, we want to find, not only solve, we want to solve two problems. We want to get rid of black people, while at the same time, we want to dig up uranium. It's obvious what the solution is there. And that is obvious to what they did. And the people.
So do you kind of look at what's happening now with South Africa as like in a very twisted way, like karma or are there revenge?
There's a lot. When I did the read,
I'm just asking the question. I'm just saying, like, now that I know the history here, I'm kind of looking at it a little bit different.
Dude, yeah. You know, when I did the read through of this, I keep doing something which I don't think people understand until they understand the context. But I kept going, ooh, Nelson Mandela, because that's what they did. That's the, you know, Nelson Mandela became this person to reset. Oh, everybody, you don't have to read. We reconciliation committees. We can all get on now. We can just leave the past behind us. Ignore the fact that they genocided so many people. They were, it was a clear genocide. Ignore it. Just, oh, Nelson Mandela, everybody's running around. Black Jesus. Here's Black Jesus here to reset everything, to make everything right. He didn't reset it. It happened, and it hasn't properly been looked at because of the powerful people involved. The people who owned the roasting mine with British company Rio Tinto Zinc. And the uranium was being used to fuel not only the British nuclear program, but nuclear programs around the world. And where did these guys come from? Where did Klaus Thiel? Klaus Thiel was based in America. He gets picked up. Now, something I didn't
include. No, to be fair, this is Peter Thiel's father.
Yes.
I mean, I guess you could say the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree, but I mean, Peter Thiel's just a child here. I mean,
he's just a little Satan. He's just a little Satan running around, decoiling in the streets, drinking out of Nazi cups. And dear old daddy is there sending black people to their death, a secret genocide that's never been held to account, while Peter Thiel sits on a stage and talks about Satan. Talks about
the Antichrist. This, yeah, he's talking about the Antichrist. Yeah.
Dude, this looks like this is, if you want Antichrist, if you want what would happen, and I tell you, sending people, knowingly sending people to their death, and watching them walk in,
okay,
and not
here's
having
what's
any
scary
care.
To me. Here's what's scary to me is that this is what he comes from, and he's going to be in charge of everything AI.
Yeah.
Palantir.
Crazy. Everything. I mean, in ways you can't even fathom properly, because you only can understand when you got the context of what the technology does. You have the context of what the dangers are, and we don't see it. They're 3, 4, 5 generations ahead in technology. From what we know, life is going to change for us drastically over the next 5 years.
And they're going to be controlling it like a technocracy.
Dude, technology will eat us alive, just like the uranium ate the people alive. Same thing. This is the Swakopmund mine here. The picture of it from above. It was about a kilometer and a half wide, and I think about 50, 30 kilometers across, a massive mine. 3,000 people at a time worked in this mine. This isn't just a few people. This is a lot. Now, there's a lot to be said about, you know, that who was benefiting from that, which includes fueling the power stations of Britain, France, and Germany, but also fueling nuclear bomb programs around the world and helping the apartheid South African regime create nukes and leak nukes. Remember, Israel stole some nukes from Palindaba, some nuclear technology from Palindaba, which helped them advance. Now, at the same time, 1965 to 67, Klaus Schwab's traveling across America, and he's going, doing his bit of training under a CIA-funded program at Kissinger's International Seminar. That was exposed by New York Times and Ramparts Magazine. It's not like I'm going too far with that one. I've discovered in this investigation for the first time that Klaus, I had realized that, you know, this was funded by free conduits of the CIA, the course itself. But who had actually funded Klaus Schwab to go to the course? Well, it was actually the Rotary Foundation. He was a Rotary Foundation fellow, and he went round and he spoke at different Rotary Club events around the place. But he was also doing something else. During this period, in between the Harvard seminar, he went to the center of where nuclear theory was happening, UC Berkeley, at the Lawrence Radiation Laboratories, which were serious places. It was where the center of the American nuclear program. And he stayed there, Klaus Schwab stayed there for 6 weeks learning about radiation, learning about what they were doing. Obviously, he's recruited, he's doing a CIA-funded program at the same time. He's being shown all of the nuclear stuff, and then he's going to South Africa via his father's company, via a German conduit, which is something they always do, to leak nuclear technology to the South Africans. And for those who don't realize why that would be happening, it was important under the terms of mutually assured destruction, as mapped out by Herman Kahn, who I mentioned earlier, it was important for everybody, all of the people involved, to have access to nuclear technology. It can't just be two people pointing nukes at each other for mutually assured destruction work. It has to be everybody pointing nukes.
Right.
So they had gone from a stage of going, we shouldn't let nukes get proliferated, to being, let's make nuclear proliferation happen. At the same time, Kissinger, behind the scene, is saying out loud that Pakistan shouldn't be getting nuclear weapons. At the same time, they're giving Pakistan nuclear weapons. Zulfikar Ali Bhutto is a friend of John Kenneth Galbraith. He sent Benazir Bhutto to Harvard just after the Kissinger's International Seminar finished, and asked John Kenneth Galbraith to be her mentor. And he put his son in charge, who became lifelong friends with Benazir Bhutto. And at the same time, they were leaking nuclear technology to him, and at the same time chastising him about getting nuclear technology in public. It was all secret proliferation of nukes. So everybody had them. This is, this is heavy. So at the same time, then Escher Weiss created lots of nuclear technology. There's a lot in this article about that. This is Klaus Steele here.
Klaus Steele, right there, huh?
Yeah, that's the one with the two, in between the two bars, in between the two bars of gold, with a big smile on his face, second in from the right. That is Klaus Steele. It's written Rex Guinevere, John Ranson, Klaus Thiel, and Jack Thompson, minor opening reception. So we know that. Well, we can assume that's him.
Right.
It certainly does look like him. There's a lot in this article. There is a lot. For anybody who wants to support the work, you can buy me a coffee. I think it's really important to understand why this is of importance, because they claim to be two separate people as well. You know, Peter Thiel and Klaus Schwab don't connect.
I never would have made that connection. I didn't even know there was a connection there.
I think there's so many. It's only a very up there when you're dealing with these people, when you're dealing with this type of technology, very small circle.
I mean, so I mean, everyone is feeling pretty good that Klaus Schwab stepped down from the World Economic Forum. Trump's president, but then Trump does this deal with Peter Thiel, and people are kind of confused about it. It's a direct connection to Schwab. It's a next, they're all involved here.
Schwab spent his whole life leaking nuclear weapon technology, trying to advance technology. Now, something happened in 1967, 1967, 1968. Herman Kahn and the Hudson Institute were working for the State Department. At the same time, Klaus Schwab was going back to Germany, and Herman Kahn was becoming a mentor. And they had created something called the Year 2000. And the Year 2000 basically looked at all of the future potential weapons technology that will come that they can foresee. And they mapped it out using game theory, and they were really accurate. Really, really. They
Using
worked out
what? Your
things that we
mic's
haven't.
breaking up a little bit. Game theory?
Game theory.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry. How's my mic? Is my mic
It's
okay
better
now?
now. It's better now. Yeah,
Okay,
it's been
okay,
cutting a little
okay.
bit.
Okay, right. They used game theory to map out all the future technology. So what has got to be understood is they were well ahead of the game. They knew exactly what was coming in the future. They knew exactly what was coming in the future. Basically, they then sent Klaus Schwab back, start ticking off those things one after another. His job was to keep technology going.
So everything that we're seeing now has already been planned many, many years ahead, obviously. We all know this. And the deal with Peter Thiel is that's already been set. If it wasn't Trump, it would have been Biden or anybody else that would have been president doing the deal with Peter Thiel, right? I mean, he was going to be the guy to bring this forward, no matter what.
Yeah, he was chosen. He was chosen by a very small group of people that emanate from the same place, from the Harvard elite. So after 1967, when all of it got exposed as being CIA funded, a new group came into power, a group called the Neoconservatives. Irving Kristol was given the keys to the kingdom. NGOs were going to be created, and they were going to use CIA power via conduits, create things like USAID and other NGOs that they could exert power over a distance and enact even color revolutions eventually. It's all part of the plan. In 1985, Irving Kristol funded a magazine called the Stanford Review. The first ever president editor-in-chief of the Stanford Review was Peter Thiel, taken under the wings of the neoconservatives, and it entered neoconservatism into the debate at universities straight away. From that point on, Peter Thiel was a neoconservative. And neoconservatives do the opposite of what you think here and there. They use, they even though they're very much on the right of the left-wing spectrum, the kind of central left, leaning very much over the right mostly, they believe in the idea of permanent revolution, which is a Trotskyite idea. So it's an idea of Trotsky. And it's a very communist idea. It's the idea that you constantly cause issues and keep everything into a state of permanent revolution, and that will constantly rebuild things and make things anew
I
over
guess
and
kind of
over.
like order out of chaos type of
Yes, that's
order out of
exactly.
chaos.
And essentially, Elon Musk is a neoconservative. Essentially, Peter Thiel is a neoconservative, and neoconservatives are basically running the country.
So what do you think the deal is with Trump and Elon Musk? Do you think they're really on the outs? Is this just all theater? Is he jealous that Trump gave Peter Thiel the contract? What do you think is going on there?
Definitely all theater. I can promise you it's all theater. I mean, Trump, he to keep power, to keep in power, he has to have these rich technocrats on the side because they hold all the sway, and all of the rest is theater. They play the Hegelian dialectic over and over again. They position themselves as either one extreme of the spectrum or the other extreme of the spectrum. Listen, a big test for everybody is if these people live on the extremity of normality, they're not normal. You know, the middle the middle ground, the place in the middle, is always where reality is. The extremities leads to fantasy, and it causes argument, and that causes chaos, and then they bring order out of that chaos. Control of chaos allows for order, and you look at the whole, I mean, perpetual limited warfare is really the warfare, the kind of warfare of permanent revolution. You're constantly causing it. And so this is, you know, this is a story as old as time. I follow back people's ancestry, and you know what I find? More tyrants. If I look at tyrants and I look at the ancestry of tyrants, I find more tyrants. If I look at the ancestry of genocidal maniacs, I find more genocidal.
And that is genealogy, or that is the tree that Peter Thiel comes from.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jeez.
Tyrant.
I mean, he's out there right now on stage talking about the Antichrist and this and that, and everyone's looking at him going, okay. But now that we know his history, what you've brought to light here, that says a lot to me and my audience. I mean, this is scary stuff, man. And we know where we're headed, and we don't want someone like that in charge of the technocracy, the AI, everything that's happening right now. Peter Thiel has been given the keys to the kingdom by Trump, basically.
It's not like his father worked at the State Department doing a couple of operations that were illicit or illegal. He was responsible for the genocide of tens, if not 100 plus thousand black slaves. That's pretty serious, dude. Yeah. That's pretty
serious. Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. That's very disturbing. And I think my audience deserves to know who this guy is. Now, this was his father. Did you dig up any dirt on Peter Thiel himself?
Yeah, I'm doing it.
Besides being related to a monster, but
I'm doing it, dude. I'm currently both with Elon Musk and Peter Thiel. It's about time that we have a look at their entire history from start to finish. And I'm starting to find some stuff. But Peter Thiel's complicated. He likes to be evil. So what I'm tending to do is find other people who are related to Peter Thiel around him. And I'm able to find more evil happening, and they're all related. So it's, you know, let's see where the evidence takes me. I go all over the place. I go wherever it leads.
Wow. Well, I really appreciate your investigative journalism, Johnny. You're not just a podcaster. You got a Substack. You're an investigative journalist, man. I really appreciate this. Your mic was cutting out a little bit, but I think people do not care about that, because you brought such amazing information and evidence and research that is just incredible. So, wow, man. Thank you, Johnny. Johnny Vedmore, everybody. And his show is NewsPaste, or it's newspaste.com. That's where they can find you.
Yep. Yeah, that's where they can find me, bro.
Nice little kitten right there.
Yeah. She's 16 years old.
Really? Oh, wow. Yeah, I got a cat too. So I never thought I'd be a cat owner, but I got one. So, wow, Johnny, thank you so much for joining me, man.
Thank you, bro. It's appreciated.
Very informative. God bless you.
God bless you.